hearing on House Bill 2483 and a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 3515. We had a couple of people to testify carried over, and let's see who. Yeah, that's right. So we have Ms. Labberton, Ms. Schenkel, and then Ms. Hebb, did you want to testify also? And then also Ann Christian. And then so anything that you all can do to help me move it along, because we do have to get back up to the floor shortly. So if Ms. Labberton, if you could please come forward.
Chair Shields, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sarah Beth Labberton, and I am an advocate at Mid-Valley Women's Crisis Service. Mid-Valley Women's Crisis Service serves Salem and Marion County. We are the oldest continuous hotline for victims of sexual assault and domestic violence in the state. And for 33 years, we have worked with families to provide hope and safety. We've worked with tens of thousands of victims. We receive hotline calls and have a safe house shelter here in town. I want to thank you for the work that you have been doing for the women we serve through additional funding and things that we have seen this past session. And I am privileged to be here today to talk to you about House Bill 3329 as amended. We feel this is very important legislation. With the work we do, unfortunately, we hear about strangulation far more often than I ever expected before I started in this position. We recently had the opportunity, a few of us, to attend training by Mark Wynn, who is a nationally acclaimed expert on domestic violence investigation. He was a former police officer, and he did a whole section on strangulation that really further taught our advocates the dangers that these women are facing. As we heard from the DA representative yesterday, you know, it just takes 11 pounds of pressure for 10 seconds on the carotid artery to cause unconsciousness, and just only 4.5 pounds of pressure to completely obstruct a jugular vein. And to give you some sort of idea, that's about the amount of pressure it takes for someone to open a door, to turn a door handle. So it's really not a whole lot of effort at all to hurt someone significantly. When we speak with victims who talk about strangulation, we always encourage them to seek medical attention because we know that the effects can be long-term and can be very devastating and emotionally scary and difficult for them to handle. There was a quote I read from an advocate back east that I think really captured the fear that a lot of these women feel. She said, "When someone puts their hands around your neck and squeezes, it changes how you feel about everything, everywhere. It turns people from average people into hostages. It's a statement that he can end your life at any time he wants to." And I have heard that echoed in similar terms, victim after victim, unfortunately. House Bill 3329 with the -1 amendments is narrowly focused, and I'm confident that it recognizes the very lethal behavior of strangulation that's often a part of domestic violence and sexual assault, and provides the much-needed accountability for perpetrators out there. So I really urge you to support House Bill 3329 with the amendments. I think you have a great opportunity to take a stand against this violent behavior and keep women in Oregon safe. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much for your testimony and your work on behalf of public safety. Ms. Hebb.
Thank you. Chair Shields, members of the committee, Sybil Hebb from the Oregon Law Center, representing the Law Center as well as the Oregon Alliance on Violence Against Women, which is a grassroots network of domestic violence and sexual assault service providers. We're here today in support of House Bill 3329. Very much want to first appreciate and thank the chair and the members of the committee for their leadership in establishing greater access to services for these survivors at the network of shelters and service providers across the state. The additional dollars in that fund have been just a vital step forward in our efforts to eventually assure that all survivors have access to the most important services in the state. So we very much appreciate that. In support of House Bill 3329, I want to make it clear that we also support the Dash 1 amendments and believe that they provide a narrowly tailored method of recognizing very lethal behavior that has been under-recognized both by the public safety system as well as by survivors, victims, and the general public. As Ms. Labberton and witnesses yesterday testified, this behavior, strangulation, is a serious crime, and it's especially prevalent in domestic violence and sexual assault cases and can lead to death and serious injury and death in just a matter of minutes. One of the scariest aspects of this is that because it's so unrecognized and because some of the impact takes place days, weeks, even after the injury, allowing people to understand the lethality and understand the severity of the crime immediately helps provide greater likelihood that they're going to seek services like a medical attention and safety services in the immediate aftermath of the crime, thereby a greater chance of reducing injury as well as further assault. So we very much believe that the recognition of the seriousness by identifying these particular circumstances as worthy of felony charges is both an accountability as well as a prevention tool, and believe that this passage of this bill, which has been on the agenda of the Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Service Providers for three sessions now, in an effort to recognize this lethality, is one of the third stool legs of the stool of safety and prevention. And just appreciate your attention to the issue and urge your aye vote.
Thank you very much. Any questions for these witnesses? Thank you very much for your testimony. Ms. Christian.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ann Christian, and I represent the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. And I wish to provide some information on House Bill 3329, including on the amendments that I would characterize as clarification with regard to some testimony that I listened to yesterday. And I just want to make three things clear from my testimony, so I hope I accomplish that. Number one, I want to make it clear that there, in many of the instances, that the horrible instances that you heard about yesterday, that existing criminal law does cover the conduct that has been described to you. And the legislature in 2003 made the judgment, the policy decision, to create a new crime called strangulation to cover an area where some people believe that there weren't current criminal provisions to cover that. Now, two sessions later, you're faced with the policy decision of providing for an enhancement to the crime of strangulation to make it a felony. Here's one of my concerns, is the approach that many of us take to public safety issues is always to increase the penalty that's associated with a crime. And in many instances, that may be a valid approach. But what I've learned in circumstances, and I'm certainly no expert in domestic violence, as many of these people have so much more expertise in it, but one of the concerns I've heard expressed is that individuals who engage in any kind of domestic violence, whether it's strangulation or battering, a huge concern, and I certainly understand it, is the release, the pretrial release of that individual. And there's a concern that if an individual defendant is only charged with a misdemeanor, then they'll be released pretrial and be a greater threat to the victim. I would say that that just exemplifies a reason for us to globally look at all these criminal laws, because if a primary concern is pretrial release, then we ought to focus on that in this bill. So one of my concerns of the three is that the existing law already covers much of the conduct that you heard about. The second concern is that we continue, it's been 35 years, I believe, that we have continued to approach criminal law in a piecemeal fashion. And quite frankly, someone needs to look at all of the criminal laws that we have and the penalties and the issues with regard to pretrial release comprehensively. And the final, the third part of this, is I'm always concerned that we engage in the effort to deal with serious public safety issues by simply creating new crimes and looking at resource issues with less clarity. One of the things I heard yesterday was with regard to resources for the victims. And I think that that's almost as important as having a criminal law. And I would just conclude with saying that the resources should be made available also for the persons who are charged with any of these domestic violence offenses. So bottom line, what I would strongly encourage, and I think some of the advocates for domestic violence might agree, that we need to have a comprehensive review at minimum of the domestic violence related laws. And I've heard some mention that that may happen in the interim, and I would encourage it because I think that this totally is a piecemeal approach, and that always causes us concern. So thank you, and I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Christian?
Okay.
Thank you very much for your testimony. All right, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3329, and since Representative Olson is present, I would like to move to the public hearing on House Bill 2843. Representative Olson, would you like to come forward? Senator Brown, you can testify. Good.
Mr. Chair, are we going to reopen that public hearing, or is that, are we done?
The one on strangulation? For today, we're done. We might reconsider this bill on Monday as part of an amendment, perhaps, to House Bill 276.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, committee, thank you. My name is Andy Olson. I'm state representative out of the Albany area. And House Bill 2843 comes to you from, the full committee passed it out of the House Judiciary a few months ago, and it had heard testimony a couple different occasions on it. Senator Kate Brown and I began working on this bill probably, it's been over 15 months ago, maybe 16 months ago. But I'll just give you a quick little picture of how this all occurred. Several law enforcement officers around the state about a year and a half ago approached me. They were concerned about the issue of when they went out to a physical abuse or a sexual abuse investigation, and in that they happened to see some videos, pornography, I mean really hardcore stuff, which is described in 2843, and not really being able to do much with it. So from that point, a number of us got together, Bill Taylor from Judiciary Council and several other folks, including members from Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, OCDLA, ACLU, Department of Justice, as well as Anaheim from the Library Association and also the DA's Association were there, and we met several different times during the interim. And today is what you have in front of you. 2843. It has been modified a little bit. There's been an extreme amount of testimony in front of Judiciary. You have two of your members that are here that had chance to listen to it. And during that time period, they had expert testimony come in and share the harm. And that's where we were really wanting to go with the description of some very hardcore stuff does on children. There's two portions to the bill. There's one that deals with furnishing sexually explicit material to a child, and then there's also a grooming statute or a luring of a minor statute. So I'll let you jump in there.
I was like, thanks, Mr. Chair.
Chairs.
The real chair. Just kidding, Representative Shields. For the record, State Senator Kate Brown represents Senate District 21. Thanks so much for hearing this bill. As Representative Olson talked about, we have Been working on this bill for a lengthy period of time. We think it's a really good product. You should have, or you will have, tomorrow or Monday, an amendment to the bill that I think Representative Olson have agreed upon, which will strengthen the protections of for lawful use of material under both Article 1, Section 8 of the Oregon Constitution and the First Amendment. The amendment will strengthen the protections for persons who are lawfully using persons. It will eliminate language about simulated sexual acts in response to concern by the Media Coalition, which includes the Motion Picture Association. I've decided in working on this bill that I don't see enough movies. Our intent in that piece of the amendment is, in using the word simulated, was to address computer-generated images, but in working with judiciary and legislative counsel, we believe that computer images are included under the bill without specifically identifying it. We're working on some of the defense issues, but in summary, I think we've created a really strong bill. For me, it's a really straightforward issue that the current Oregon law regarding child pornography is unconstitutional. We believe we have a constitutional version that would prohibit furnishing sexually explicit material to a child and luring a minor, which would be a Class C felony. And colleagues from me, this is about the fact that we have a number of children in our society today that have been sexually abused. This is about criminalizing the precursor behavior that is very harmful, and I think it's extremely important that we act on this bill this session. So happy to answer any questions, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Brown. Representative Wilson, questions? Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said that the current statutes on child pornography were unconstitutional. I had thought that we had changed those to become to limit it to obscenity and that they were constitutional. Could you elaborate on that?
That's my understanding. I'm sure someone else could. I can't.
Okay. Well, wait.
I can't.
Any other questions? Thank you very much for bringing this bill forward.
Thanks.
And this is the
list. Mr. Chair, if I can briefly, both Legislative Council and Judiciary Council worked with us extensively on this bill, and I just want to say thank you.
Would you like them to testify or any aspects of this bill?
I'm sure Darian will be back and just step down and
go get him.
Okay. It's your, up to you, Senator.
Okay, why don't you come on up? You have somebody from the Attorney General's office that can respond to Senator Brown's question.
Okay.
Chair Shields, members of the committee, my name is Michael Slauson with the Department of Justice. I'm Assistant Attorney General assigned to the Criminal Justice Division, and I'm the Internet Crimes Against Children prosecutor. Chair Shields, Senator Burdick, just in response to your question, you were sounded like you're asking specifically about our child pornography statutes, and those are constitutional. The court found as such in State versus Stoneman. This deals with a slightly different issue, this particular legislation.
So this isn't, Mr. Chair, to follow up, this isn't replacing some unconstitutional provision in the statutes. This is a separate issue. Is that correct?
Chair Shields, Senator Burdick, it does replace particular provisions dealing with furnishing obscene materials to minors, which is a different statutory scheme than what we deal with child pornography, which we call sexually explicit images of children.
Okay. This was just my, Mr. Chair, wherever you are, Mr. Other Chair. I just was trying to refresh my memory because I had thought we had corrected the unconstitutional child pornography statutes. And what I'm hearing you saying is the statutes that are on the books now are constitutional, but this is another approach. Is that correct?
Chair Shields, member of the committee, Senator Burdick. Yeah, I think in 2001 the legislature modified some of the current provisions in response to court case, State versus Maynard. Didn't make all the changes, though, that over the years the court sort of identified as being problematic. So what this current legislation does is take that guidance that was given to us by the court and make sure that our statutes comply with that guidance.
Great. Thank you very much.
Can't do that.
And I think, Mr. Stanford, we don't particularly need his testimony, but so I think we're okay. Let's just move on to the other folks who would like to testify. Ms. Christian, could you please come forward, testifying for Amy Miller of the Juvenile Rights Project?
Mr. Chair, Ann Christian with Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. First of all, our organization is neutral on this bill, and we were involved with the extensive work group with Senator Brown and Representative Olson, and thank them for involving us from the beginning of the discussion. And I did sign up to testify on behalf of Amy Miller with Juvenile Rights Project, who is out of town, and because of the fact that I may not be able to be here tomorrow if there is a work session, and she will still be out of town. If the work session is tomorrow, you will be seeing, whenever the work session, you may be seeing amendments that would exempt, if you will, juveniles under Section 2 of this bill. Section 2, again, is the furnishing of materials to minors as opposed to the luring bill. And this is an amendment that Juvenile Rights requested be drafted and which Juvenile Rights has discussed with the proponents. And Amy Miller, if the work session is on Monday, will be much, much better than I able to explain to you the reason why they want an exemption for individuals who are juveniles under 18 years of age. My understanding is that there's a concern that individuals in foster care could be caught up within this criminal statute, and there is precedent in other criminal laws for not applying laws that would make conduct criminal for adults by not making that part of the juvenile code as well. And so I just wanted to bring that to your attention as far as some of the amendments that you'll be seeing. Juvenile Rights Project on purpose did not include in the amendment that individuals under 18 years of age should be exempted from the more serious offense in this bill, which we call luring. So thank you, and I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Ms. Christian. Any questions?
I'm sorry.
Representative Barker.
See in Section 2 where if there's less than 3 years difference, it doesn't count, but I'm not sure what you're saying.
Mr. Chair and Representative Barker, when we're looking at page 2, it would be on line 4 where we have the word person. So if the person, and JRP's amendment would add, if the person is 18 years of age or older, and intentionally furnishes a child. So I understand the current provision about the age range, but it would exempt, I would believe, let's use a 17-year-old from providing to a, 13 and 11-month-old person.
So a 17-year-old is grooming a 13-year-old.
Mr. Chair and Representative Barker, grooming, and maybe this hasn't been clear, but the grooming provisions are Section 3, and that's exactly my understanding is why JRP did not ask for an amendment that addresses Section 3, which is luring or grooming individuals.
Probably 17-year-old trying to film this to a 13-year-old.
So no one's.
Senator Burdick.
Where are these amendments that would make that change?
Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, they have been drafted, and I have them, but I guess they just haven't been distributed since we're not in a work session.
Thank you.
All right. Ms. Meyer.
Chair Shields, members of the committee, Andrea Meyer, legislative director for the ACLU of Oregon. I actually think that we've been involved in talking about this issue for longer than anyone else when John Minnist approached the ACLU years ago. And we agreed that there was an area of the law that needed to be fixed. And that is, what is Section 3? But that is when a person provides sexually explicit material to a minor with the intention of grooming the minor for sexual assault, sexual abuse. So there's a criminal intent by the person who's providing it, and a clear intent and a wholly inappropriate intent. And it was years ago we attempted to come to language and we weren't able to. So we are very pleased to see that part of the law addressed. But unfortunately, I am here today in opposition to the final product that is before you today because of our concerns around Section 2. And that's been called, so the Section 3 is the luring, and that's the one that, again, has the criminal intent. But Section 2 concerns us because while it requires that the person, it creates a crime for a person who furnishes sexually explicit material to a child if the person intentionally furnishes it or permits a child to view it. But not with...
We just got some amendments handed to us, and I'm not sure if they addressed your concerns or not, but I want to make sure you had them.
Chair Shields, member of the committees. No, my amendments have not, I don't think, are coming forward. I think they're a pile. And if I can ask Senator Brown, is this the accumulation of the... There were apparently a number of amendments that have been floating around for the last few weeks, and I think this is, and ACLU wasn't involved in this, some of them, and I believe, and I'll let others speak, that Ms. Christian's representing the Juvenile Rights Project Amendment. I don't believe it's in here, okay, in what you have.
So your testimony won't
change. And there are some improvements in that, but I want to focus on Section 2 and our concerns because, no. Without going into history too much, when we had our, now, you know, we're so used to looking at Article 1, Section 8 focus that, indeed, when we finally had our national, and belatedly, and I will acknowledge that we should have done it earlier to allow Senator Brown and Representative Olson the opportunity for us to convey our more current concerns, which we did, it was a number of months ago at this point. But when our national ACLU looked at it, they determined in their wisdom and extensive experience in this area of law federally that Section 2 did not pass muster under the First Amendment. Now, I know, I believe there is some revised language before you today. There was earlier some new language put forward that some, I believe the motion picture industry said, well, this fixes our concerns federally. Well, I understand what was looked at. Folks thought it ran afoul of Article 1, Section 8, our free speech provision. I assume that this latest attempt is to try to, someone said, you know, that thin thread through the needle. But I would raise significant concerns with this. We don't like importing federal law language into our statutes. Our Oregon courts don't interpret our free expression in the same manner as the federal. So if they did and we use same federal language, we could be pretty sure it passes muster under the Oregon Constitution. But when it comes to our free expression provision, we have a very distinct case law and interpretation. And what concerns us is what is otherwise a very good law, we believe, at least at the best, raises some constitutional questions and concerns us in terms of the policy decision, unfortunately, that you're to make, which is the assumption that if a person intentionally allows someone to view what is sexually explicit material, it should be a crime. There are exceptions in this. I think there may be some, you know, that you'll see. So there's exceptions just for folks who are, that talks about sex education, art education, medical treatment. So I don't want to misrepresent that this would happen in all situations. It's narrowed. But, again, we are very concerned. We hate to see what has been such hard work and an attempt to deal with the fact that Oregon has statutes on the books that are unconstitutional, that we put something else there that's likely going to be challenged and poses a risk. And if we had our druthers, we would urge you to move forward by omitting Section 2. We think it's a great bill. It gets to what had always been the concern, starting with John Minnis, again, about going after those people who have evil criminal intent and catching them even if they have not been successful in engaging in the actual assault of the minor. I'm happy to answer any questions and appreciate the opportunity today to express our concerns.
Thank you, Ms. Meyer, for coming forward. Senator Burdick, and then we'll have to keep moving.
Thank you. is it your argument that this, well, would you please be specific about why the act of furnishing is unconstitutional under Article 1, Section 8?
I would do. Well, Chair Shields, Senator Burdick, it was our nationals actually review that Section 2 violated the First Amendment. And unfortunately, I cannot, I don't have today, I could probably get for you the specific concerns in a manner that would put it. I think it's the vagueness and the definitions and the breadth. You don't have a criminal intent. It could be broadly construed and broadly applied in places where there's not the, you know, the mens rea, the criminal intent of trying to injure a minor. A minor might see it. It might be an older sibling. I think there's the parent exception. It might be an older sibling. Check this out. Might be an older sibling that doesn't have the best judgment. Might be an older sibling who has some mental health issues. Doesn't matter. Just might be an older sibling hanging out, you know, two brothers hanging out and showing, intentionally showing materials that would fall under this definition. And they would be subject to a crime. Now, I think, again, Juvenile Rights Project brings forward an important amendment because at least if you get the youth out of here, who are, as we all know, not making decisions necessarily in a manner that we might enjoy, that would be a step in the right direction. But because of its vagueness in when, what do we mean by intentionally furnishing and permitting a child to view when you don't have at the other end for the purposes of hurting the child, for the purposes of, you know, committing a crime. So it's and we asked our national, and this is not an area I have legal expertise to draft. I asked our national, and at the behest of Senator Brown, is there a way that we think we could write Section 2 that would narrow it and provide the address the concerns that ACLU has? And our expert, and again, he's litigated a lot in the U.S. Supreme Court and knows national U.S. Supreme Court and constitutional language, could not get there on this. You know, we've got it on Section 3, but we just couldn't get there on Section 2.
Senator Brown.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Meyer, my recollection from the numerous work group meetings before session were that at least the Oregon ACLU had a comfort level with Section 2 under the Oregon Constitution. Is that not right?
Chair Shields, Senator Brown, I want to answer that in two ways. The ACLU was never comfortable with this language. Whether we were comfortable, what we should have done is shared it more with folks who could give us a better opportunity to look at the Oregon. And that is our, and I take full responsibility for our not, you know, we focus on Section 3 and we felt very comfortable and very knowledgeable in that area as to what would pass muster. And, you know, we didn't on Section 2. You know, I think it does have problems under Article 1, Section 8, but if it can't pass muster under the First Amendment, it's not going to stand up.
Senator
Brett, then.
Follow up.
So I guess what I thought I heard you say is that, or at least in my recollection, it was my understanding that the ACLU, at least of Oregon, felt some comfort level that this met Oregon constitutional requirements and that in your work in the work group that there was a level of neutrality in terms of meeting Oregon constitutional requirements.
Right. Chair Shields, Senator Brown, again, you know, ACLU, we probably didn't do our due diligence that we should have when this bill was finally in final form. And we have gone on the record, and Senator Brown, I think, and I don't know if you had a chance to listen to hearing tapes. I know at the last hearing when I was before Judiciary, and I know David Fedenke when he spoke on this when it first came up, and we apologized because, you know, we look at it both. And so to answer your question specifically, I don't know that we really properly vetted this section under Article 1, Section 8 to say that we felt it was neutral or it complied.
Right.
And that was our mistake, and I acknowledge that.
Mr. Chair, I think my last question would be is my understanding of Oregon constitutional law, at least in this arena, is that it is broader than the federal constitution. Is that
an incorrect understanding?
Sheriff Shields, Senator Brown, it's broader in terms of protecting people's expression. I want to frame it. Yes, we provide more free speech protections. A quick example, commercial speech is protected the same as political speech in our Constitution, not the same under the federal.
Thank you.
With nudity and other issues, more protection, or for some, they say too much protection or not enough protection. I want to make sure we frame it from each of our perspectives.
Thank you very much. Ms. Meyer. We do need to move on. There's nobody else on the list, but Senator Brown, would you like to have anybody else testify, or should we?
Well, Mr. Shields, I don't know if the committee has. Mr. Slauson from the Department of Justice has worked extensively on this. If the committee wants to hear from him regarding the constitutional issues, Mr. Stanford from Judiciary Legal Counsel, as well as our legislative counsels, whose last name I cannot recall. I know his first name is Josh, can respond to any of the committee's concerns regarding the constitutional issues.
Would it be okay if we brought, if you could choose one and just bring up for sake two or 3 minutes? Who would like
what
to?
What do you guys come up? I don't care.
And if you could just try to keep it brief because we do have a number of bills we need to get through.
Okay.
Sheriff Shields, member of the committee, again, my name is Michael Sloss from the Department of Justice. We have talked a lot about the constitutional issues, and Article 1, Section 8 does provide a much broader protection than the First Amendment. There was an issue of importing some First Amendment language that dealt with obscenity as it relates to adults into this particular statute. The language that would have been imported, though, the Oregon Supreme Court in the case State versus Henry found was not the type of words that you could use. They were too ambiguous and too nebulous to use under Oregon law. So what this particular section does, it does comport with Article 1, Section 8, and it does, based on the Department of Justice opinion, does comport with the First Amendment. If you have any other more questions, I can try and answer.
I think that's your position is very clear. Thank you very much. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2843. Thank you very much, Representative Olson. Good to see you here. And we will open a work session on House Bill 3563. We will stand at ease until we find Mr. Wilson.
House Bill 3563 is a bill that establishes the Public Safety Strategies Task Force. I'll let the chair go through the particulars of the bill, but in your packet you have a fiscal, and it's one of these legislative fiscals that say here's what the cost would be if you meet a certain level threshold of sort of legislative or legislative interim committees or task forces. So it's not necessarily that this is the fiscal. It means that if there are more than a certain number of these types of task forces appointed or created during the session for the interim, that would be the cost. I am not sure if we've reached that threshold or not. In addition, there's $100,000 set aside in the bill over and above that for contracts and other things that the commission would need. And there's also a staff measure summary from the Rules Committee that first heard this bill a few days ago. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll let you go through the bill because you're probably know more about it than I do.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Colleagues, this bill is a compromise bill. A rewrite, weeks of negotiations between myself and Representative Barker, as well as Crime Victims United, and also got significant input from the Oregon District Attorneys Association. And essentially what it does is creates what is now called the Public Safety Strategies Task Force, and that will look at a variety of things, but essentially to try to determine whether or not we're getting the right mix in our public safety dollars. Are we investing the right amounts of investments in child development programs, as you'll see in line 14, programs that reduce recidivism in line 17, ways that we can reduce criminal and delinquent behavior in lines 19, ways that we can prevent and deter crime in lines 21, and review sentencing laws to make them better meet the principles of Section 15, Article 1 of the Constitution, which was the rewrite of the constitutional amendment that I believe Crime Victims United was instrumental in, that said the purpose of public safety is, I think it's offender accountability, public safety, and then there's one other thing, and then the last one is reformation. And to really try to figure out whether or not we're getting the right mix. And another part of the bill is that in section, beginning on line 27, we added a number of things that Crime Victims United was interested in taking a look at, including expanding use of DNA sampling, expansion of criminal background checks, reviewing how we do post-prison supervision, probation, parole. And then I felt it was also important that we look at use of local jail beds around the state. That's been a significant problem in Multnomah County. And if you look at a lot of the jails around the state, you have empty beds not because they haven't been constructed, but because they can't be staffed. And so it's my view, and several of you were co-sponsors on the original 856. It's my view that these are appropriate topics for the legislature to discuss, to review, and study, and voting for this bill wouldn't commit you to any of the recommendations of the task force. They would still have to come before the legislature. Representative Barker.
Thank you, Representative Chairman Shields. This was worked out quite a bit, and both Representative Shields and I agree. We didn't want to set up something that with a group that would already have in their mind what the answer was going to be. We really want to have a real look at things, and I really want to commend Representative Shields for bending over backwards to make this work, and I really appreciate all the effort he put in to working with me and working with Crime Victims United to see what I think we have now is a good product where we can have more of a hopefully a balanced look at these things. And we all know that things aren't working perfectly. We still got prisons full of people, and we still got crime going on. And hopefully some of these things can point us in the right direction to help reduce that, not only our costs, but the human costs for the victims that are out there. And I think this is a really great start, and I'm looking forward to supporting this bill.
Thank you, Representative Barker. So maybe I could go, since we are in work session, entertain a motion, then we can have further discussion.
Mr. Chair, I move pass. Are there any amendments?
There are not. The amendments were moved in the rules committee.
House Bill 3563 to the full
Ways
and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Winters has moved House Bill 3563. To the floor, or to the full Ways and Means with the due pass recommendation. Discussion. Any objections? Any objections?
No, but I just want to say, for the record, for your tenacity and your perseverance, you know, we talked about this early on in session, and your work on bringing this forward and getting this passed through the process. I think this is long overdue. So.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Burdick.
I wanted to add my voice to that, too, Mr. Chair. I don't think anyone in this whole body has worked harder than you to try to really take on the difficult issue of sentencing policy, and this is going to give us a good format to get some real work done.
Thank you, Senator Burdick. Anybody else want to say nice things about me?
No.
Let's go.
All right. Further discussion? Representative Cameron.
Mr. Chair, I'm just still reading the bill. Sorry I wasn't prepared today to read this bill. The recommendations are made to who? I'm looking at line 23 and 25.
There will be a report that they will submit by October 2008.
Yes,
to the interim committee related to judiciary no later than October 1, 2008. And then that'll get it into the legislative record, and judiciary committee can decide what to do with it.
H2, line 17.
Or the legislature can. Line 20 on page 2. Thank you. Further discussion? Any objections?
Nope.
Passes unanimously. All right. Thank you, Mr. Wilson.
You need to hear Mr.
Wilson. Oh, yes, we will.
I'm not getting through all this fine.
Let's see. Senator Winters and Senator Burdick, how about you both are co-carriers? Co-carriers on the Senate side.
Yes.
And if it's okay with everybody else, I'll carry it in full and on the floor.
What a bill hog.
if you would like to, Representative Nathanson. All right. I will close the work session on 3563 and open a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 35. Well, I'll open a public hearing on 3515.
Chair Shields, members of the committee, House Bill 3515 creates the crime of online sexual corruption of a child in the second degree, a Class C felony, and online sexual corruption of a child in the first degree, a Class B felony. The Class C felony is punishable by a maximum of 5 years imprisonment and a $125,000 fine. A Class B felony is punishable by a maximum of 10 years imprisonment and a $250,000 fine. Both of these crimes require the offender to register as a sex offender. I'd like to talk a little bit about the fiscal impact on this. Technically, it's indeterminate because this is a relatively new crime, although these behaviors can be currently prosecuted under existing statute and rule. This is a little bit newer one. It doesn't actually increase the sanctions associated with the crime. However, it does make them easier to prosecute. So with that being said, making it a little bit easier, we may find that these crimes are prosecuted more than they currently are. But with the actual definitions being a little bit newer, it's hard to go back into our databases and identify, you know, what we think might happen in the future on this, and this is why it's indeterminate. And I'd also like to point out that's very similar to the previous bill that we heard, 2843, and we have not done a formal fiscal on 2843, but I suspect we will find the same things to be true. So the fiscal is indeterminate on it, but depending upon the resources that local jurisdictions may put to online corruption, we may find that fiscal impact could be substantial, but we don't know for sure.
Okay, I'm calling Representative McPherson's office to see if he wanted to testify on this. Mr. Stanford, do you want to testify about what the bill does?
Sure, I'm prepared to do that.
Let's do that, please.
If Ms. Christian can contact you, I can talk to the gentleman about the bill if you want.
I would appreciate that, yes.
Chair Shields and members of the committee, the House Bill 3515A, as Mr. Walker said, creates the crimes of online sexual corruption of a child, the second degree and the first degree. This is, in a sense, a whole response to the whole internet predator issue that has been so prevalent in the news media lately. But talking specifically about what the bill does, again, two crimes, online sexual corruption, second degree, first degree. Here's what online sexual corruption of a child in the second degree involves. And first of all, should say that child is defined as somebody under the age of 16. So it's not just minor, 18 or under, it's child under 16, so 15 and younger. So what you have, the elements are a defendant who is 18 or older, for the purpose of arousing the sexual desires of the defendant or another person, knowingly uses an online communication to solicit a child, that's somebody under 16, to engage in sexual contact or sexually explicit conduct. And those terms are defined under existing Oregon law, and they include pretty much a broad array of whatever kind of sexual activity is out there. There's no defense if the child is actually a law enforcement officer or somebody working at the direction of law enforcement in sort of a sting operation, which has been very prevalent in the news media. That's right now in its existing form, online sexual corruption of a child in the second degree, that's a Class C felony. Online sexual corruption of a child in the first degree involves second degree online sexual corruption, and then the person takes a substantial step towards actually physically meeting with the child. The idea of that is capturing the people who set up a meeting and go to the house to carry out the acts that they've been talking about doing online. And that then jumps to a B felony. And again, there is no defense if the child is actually a law enforcement officer or someone working at the direction of a law enforcement officer. And both, I believe as Mr. Walker said, both of these would be registrable sex offenses. I believe that the committee has before it, I'm going to guess it's a dash A5 amendments. There is one amendment, and that amendment addresses the elements of online sexual corruption of a child in the second degree. And what it says under, right now it's written that the defendant for sexual arousal purposes uses an online communication to solicit a child to engage in sexual conduct or sexually explicit conduct. The amendment adds to that, you would have to solicit, and the person offers or agrees to physically meet with the child. So the idea is to distinguish the two. Dirty talk, in a sense, alone is not enough. It's dirty talk from the privacy of your own home, and then you actually try to set up a meeting. First degree is physically go to meet the person. So that's the distinction between, that's what the amendment does. And if anybody has any questions, I'm happy to respond.
Thank you, Chair Shields. Just so I can clarify, today in the bill, if I just have dirty talk, if I have dirty talk, I'm done. I can be convicted. And the amendment is going to change it to I have to have dirty talk and solicit to be... those two things have to happen.
Chair Shields, Representative Cameron, right now, if there's no amendment adopted, it is solicit is the activity that's forbidden. And solicit is defined within Section 1, Subpart 5 of the bill. Solicit means to invite, request, seduce, lure, entice, persuade, prevail upon, coax, coerce, or attempt to do so. So it's a pretty broad array of what solicit means. That's what is forbidden right now. This amendment would say solicit, you have to solicit the person to engage in this sort of conduct, and then you actually have to say, let's get together. So does that help? If not, please follow up. But in any event, that's the distinction between the two.
Answer my question. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further questions? No. I'm sorry. Representative Nicholson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, I may have misheard, but I think I heard you use the phrase from the home. Did you mean that as only an example, or specifically it only applies from the home?
Chair Shields, Representative Nathanson, thank you for holding me to my language. That was just a specific an example. That's not what the bill requires at all. It can be from anywhere using an online communication.
And Mr. Temper, I assume that Mr. Representative Pearson is not interested in testifying. Have you heard from him?
He's Chair Shields, no. He's not.
And... any other questions for Mr. Stanford about what the bill does? Ms. Christian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm so glad Mr. Stanford came up here because he's much more familiar with the bill. My cohort, or the person I job share with, was able to put together what I thought was a really good work group, and I think Darian agrees, to take all of the bills that are out there on online solicitation and reach consensus on what we think is the best bill. And with the amendment that's been offered, the OCDLA is in support of House Bill 3515.
Really? All right. Any questions? Well, we, my sense of the committee is that we'd feel comfortable moving this today. Anybody like to discuss that, Representative Cameron?
Mr. Chair, I just want to comment. I know the Judiciary Committee got to go up to Representative Barker's house, actually, and got to hear testimony on this bill and the need for law enforcement to have this ability to make these things stick. And this is obviously these amendments maybe take it. I think having the solicitation in there is I wasn't expecting that, but it's still good that there's a lot of this going on, and they can't do anything about it until somebody actually shows up and have to prove all this intent and all this other stuff. So this is a good bill, and I'm been supportive of it and would continue to do so even with the dash fives.
Thank you, Representative Cameron. Any other discussion? Well, why don't we close the public hearing on House Bill 3515A and open a work session on 3515A. And I'll need a motion to move the dash five amendments.
Mr. Chair, I move dash five to House Bill 3515.
Representative Barker has moved the dash five amendments into House Bill 3515. Is there any discussion or objection? Seeing none, so ordered. A motion to move it to the Full Ways and Means Committee.
I've got to pass the bill.
Well, I guess we.
Yeah,
well, that would.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3515 as amended to the full committee with a due pass.
Nice job. Representative Barker has moved House Bill 3515A as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Any objections? So moved. Carrier in Full Ways and Means. Representative Hanna, would you like? All right. And so you carry it in the Full Ways and Means, and then I'll probably have Representative McPherson co-carry it with you on the floor. All right. Anything else on the agenda? Oh, yeah, the Senate. We'd like to carry it on the Senate side.
Senator Burdick can carry this bill.
Senator Burdick? Would you like to carry it on the Senate? All right. Senator Burdick is the carrier on the Senate. And, colleagues, I think that is the close of our business today. And so this meeting is adjourned.
Joint Committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on General Government, Friday, June 15th, 2007, 4 p.m., Hearing Room 170.